session number 21279, reel 5.
Cyril Williams, reel 5. So you were telling me about the flying the individual gliders, weren't mm-hmm. you? So you trained on which sort of glider?
The Hotspur was the beginning one, just the 8-seater, which was never used operationally. Mm-hmm. And then the main battle glider, which was the Horsa, 28-seater plus two pilots, all right. an equivalent load.
So you do you think you had adequate time flying the Horsa before you used it operationally?
Yes, I think so, because I enjoyed flying, and theoretically I was able to fly a light aircraft before I sat behind any controls.
Right, yeah. So you got moved from Cliff Pippard...
Pipard, yes.
Pipard, to Stoke Orchard, Cheltenham. So
yes.
What was this... Were you still with the EFT school?
No, the Elementary Flying Training School. That's the beginning. That was the Tiger Moth.
Right.
That's the basic flying for, well, naval pilots must have done it as well, and all RAF pilots, of course, and then the Army pilots.
Right. And then at Cliff Pipard, you were with... Which was your unit, as it were?
Well, I was just with 12 trainee army glider pilots, and the Cliff Pipard itself was being used as the grader station to decide who was going to be an RAF pilot or an RAF observer.
Right, okay. So then you got transferred to Stoke Orchard in
yes.
Cheltenham, Gloucestershire, yep. yeah. So who were you with then, as it were?
Well, this was, because it was theoretically, nominally, an RAF station, all our airfields were, but in practice, they were, you know, for army pilots. And it was to continue with the flying, but starting on military gliders.
Right, okay. So were you with a particular unit or organisation or...?
No, we were just a... A batch of new pilots learning to fly gliders for the first
yes.
time.
Right.
I know it seems to be the other way around. With the Germans,
yeah.
they started with gliders. In fact, they were doing that when they were banned from doing any flying, supposedly, after the First World War.
Oh, right.
But it didn't deter them. So.
Right. So what did you do at Stoke Orchard?
Well, got as many flying hours as possible with the gliders, and it was
Horses, was it?
No, that was the Hotspurs,
right.
And they were lovely looking machines. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when you were practicing various manoeuvres on tow, side slip to lose height, still being towed. Because the glider is cleaner aerodynamically, you could finish up, if you're not careful, getting in front of your tow pilot, which would be disconcerting for both. So you had to sideslip the thing, because it was very clean aerodynamically, but it also had a high keel surface. I mean, the side was, instead of being perfectly round, it was like a polished slab in a way. So there was resistance. And it was an interesting exercise, and I loved doing it. Flying to the left, jinking to the right, and all the time looking down.
Can you describe how you would do that? You know, how would you use your controls to do that?
Yes, using kinesthetic memory, you'd be pushing on the left pedal, and you would ease a little bit. It was a small wheel again, but it's always referred to as a stick. Well, it used to be. And keeping your nose up so that you don't go into a dive, just, well, fly the thing so that you go this way. And when you've gone too far, alter, right stick, right stick and also right pedal, but it sounds easy like that, but it isn't. So, but it's great fun.
Did you have some hairy moments?
Yes, I nearly got chucked off the flying course because there was a horse in the next field, and I thought, feeling a master pilot by then, that I will I'll just come in over the hedge. Anyway, when I'd got down, I realised the horse was far too big, and I barely scraped over. And the thing is, whether you're flying a glider or whether you're flying a powered aircraft, trying to stretch the approach, and it's more vital with a glider or a powered aircraft with a dead engine, you know, if you're practicing a forced landing. Because, well, if you alter the, if you make the approach too shallow, you're pulling back too much, you're losing airspeed, and you get to a point of stall where the aircraft will drop from the sky. So anyway, being watched, obviously, by instructors, and particularly by the CFI, the chief flying instructor, he must have thought, this clown is going to go into the trees, you know, the bushes there, because I think it was a jeep that bounced and belted its way to where I was. You know, I was thinking, well, I got over, so, you know, no harm done. Anyway, it was this chief flying instructor, and he gave me a right mouthing, and well deserved. Anyway, got back where my glider had been recovered by a tractor by then, and he said, get into that thing and show me you can fly properly, or you're out. So I flew sedately, I think, but that was that.
So how long did you spend at Stoke Orchard?
Couldn't be more than a couple of months. Mm-hmm. And then, ready for the heavy glider unit. And it was North Luffenham where we went for.
North Luffenham?
Yes, in near Oakham, in poor little disappeared Rutland.
Oh, it's come back.
Has it?
I believe so. Oh. Right.
Anyway,
start. That was the heavy glider.
Yes, heavy glider conversion unit.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know how long I spent there, but not too long, because they must have been getting worried that the latest intakes of gliders, glider pilots, of whom I was one, they weren't qualifying quick enough, you see. So, which I suppose was the reason for these somewhat hasty moves. Anyway, from doing a few hours there, and I were being tugged by Whitleys then, and we were asked to, or told to, get into the Whitley bomber, crawl along the narrow fuselage at the back, and in fact, there was no parachute pack because you couldn't get through with the other equipment at the end. And anyway, you two deal with what's known as a yoke. It was a heavily rubberized rope which stopped this thing from flopping about too freely. And it held this yoke at the end of the fuselage. You know, so that the thing wouldn't bounce up and down at the back too much. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was quite interesting because I would like to fly in anything if I wasn't being allowed to fly the thing. And anyway, we were moving then to Broadwell, and Broadwell was near Brize Norton. And in fact, it was just being made hastily. In fact, it was very difficult to see from the air where the runway was, the one we were supposed to land on. And there were trucks about and mounds of sand and stuff. You know, they're extending the runway. Anyway, I obviously was not flying as captain then. I was very much a learner pilot, and I was being directed by an ordinary qualified and experienced army glider pilot. So we were down, and then it was the same routine. As soon as the weather was fit, and as we became more skilled, then troublesome weather became less of a problem because we were allowed to fly when conditions were too much for a tyro pilot. And exercises. In fact, there was the first time I went to Netherhaven, where my father had been. It was a question of flying there, two pilots, landing. I'm not sure, I think it was off the aerodrome, although that was an aerodrome with no runway, just a grass one. And I think that was the oldest aerodrome. But landing somewhere on Salisbury Plain as an exercise. And then we landed and we were given rendezvous points to go to. And again, it was the poetic side of me surfaced, as I mentioned, in that Nissan hut, with Cyril, the CO's driver, and the trumpeter. He was the only one who was spoiling it by urinating from the doorway there. I saw this canopy of, the jewelled skies, and it was marvellous. I mean, it was cold.
This is at night, was it?
Yeah, yes, it was. We did these exercises. It was just like ground navigation exercises for the whole night. And then we went back. Somebody else had recovered the glider, and they were off, and we were trucked back, to where we started. But it was great fun. And, of course, there were shooting exercises, too, all the time. So, I mean, we were pretty good at that.
I thought you were. How long were you at Netherhaven?
Oh, Netherhaven was just the odd flight.
Right, yeah.
Two or three flights and nights there. But I was based then at Broadwell, a very new airfield. And there was a big transit camp there that was used by, when we were doing live load exercises and air landing troops were coming in, they were billeted there. And then when an operation was coming off on a big exercise, there was enough accommodation to take parachutists there as well. So
what sort of date was it when you were at Broadwell? Because we were getting round towards when you were going, aren't we?
Yeah.
Was it summer or winter?
Well, it was not. It was probably round about May.
Right.
Because all the talk was of invasion then.
So did you think you were going to be part of that invasion?
Well, I did. And about a third of glider pilots did not go on that operation. And I was disappointed. And because, obviously, having that training and knowing what we were being trained for, and it would have been an honour to have gone back, with the first big wave. But it was an easy operation, really. I suppose just a few dozen pilots were killed on that. And, the only bit I did on D-Day was when they were asking for volunteers to come and empty Dakotas that were also our tugs, but they'd been over to collect wounded. And this was to just stretch a wounded from, from there, and then they were taken away. And
that was at Bryce Norton, yeah.
No, that was at Broadwell, then, my permanent
place.
Yeah. But what struck me, and, it made me surprised. Some of the wounded, they said, "Oh, you're glider pilots." And they weren't really full of, oh, this is terrible, I've been wounded, no matter how badly or what. But they were being stretched about by glider pilots. So, you know, I wasn't asked for my autograph, but but it was. It's, you know, one or two remarked on that. Yeah.
Had you known when D-Day was going to be?
Yes.
You had? You
yes.
knew ahead, yeah.
Well, we knew because two-thirds of our squadron were being, they'd been to the final briefing, and it was, some gliders went the night before. In fact, the first part of France liberated, it was liberated by two gliders and air landing troops. Again, they talk about paratroopers, and they were, air landing troops from the Ox and Bucks regiment, and they landed about 2 o'clock in the morning. So that part of France was liberated then.
So news was coming back to you of what had happened at D-Day?
Oh yes, I mean it did, because we had in our AB-64s, our pay books, something telling us that we were glider pilots who were expected to return to the United Kingdom after, you know, the operations, which this would stop people from being hailed by military police. Oi, you know, you're going the wrong way, you know, that sort of thing. But anyway, it had gone. We didn't lose many from the unit. And really, it would have been a good introduction, really, because the next one was Arnhem. And
so did you have glider pilots who went into France on D-Day coming back to you before you went in? Or
oh, yes, yeah, yes. Yeah. They came back within a couple of days,
right,
because they were needed for whatever else was planned.
So what were they reporting about how it had gone?
Well,
because that was the first time, you know, you'd had a chance to talk to someone who'd actually done what you were to do.
But most of our pilots were experienced. Most of them had done they were all, not catastrophes, but they were all dodgy operations. But Sicily, they were towed by inexperienced American pilots, tug pilots, and a tug is not supposed to take violent, evasive action when it's towing a glider. But some of our people were released over the Mediterranean, and dozens of our people were drowned. And I suppose it'd be hundreds in all, because, I mean, our dozens of pilots would be taking hundreds of airborne soldiers. So, I mean, that was a tragedy. And, in fact, our commander of glider pilots, he refused from then on to have British gliders tugged by Americans.
Right.
So
you were actually putting yourself into something which has got a very poor record of success or safety.
Well, yes, but, you know, at 20 or a little bit older, as most of the others were, it wasn't a dull life. Because when you were practicing, I mean, if you enjoyed being a pilot, and most pilots do, I mean, it was splendid.
Yeah.
I mean, we would have done the job without any pay. So that was that. Yeah. But we were briefed, I think it was 12 times before we actually did the Arnhem operation, because the advance, the ground advance, was going so very well that the ground forces, they were there before we actually had taken off. So we didn't take off for these things. But when the Arnhem thing came off, I think the this is with hindsight and reading A Bridge Too Far and other things and seeing the film, Bridge Too Far seems to be very, very accurate. And he was a painstaking, thorough journalist, was Ryan. Mm. So,
so in your briefings about Arnhem, how much detail did you get? Did you know exactly where you were going?
Oh yes, indeed.
What you were going to do?
Yes. you do get a great deal of aerial photographs, because if you think of it, within a small field, it's going to be difficult getting in without striking another aircraft coming down. I mean, the sky's full. And whereas you see birds flying in great flocks and not making any trouble of it at all, human pilots, you know, they'd be cannoning into each other and they'd be dropping from the sky, from the skies. But
did you do any practice of flying lots of gliders together then?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Did you?
Including a mass nights landing, and that was at, you know, in the Wiltshire Plain, the, what was there?
Salisbury Plain.
No, what was the aerodrome that I mentioned? Said the oldest. Said my father was there.
Netheravon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was there. 22 gliders crashed one night, including the one I was in, and it was a complete write-off. And in fact, I think it was five parachutists had asked us if they could come along as passengers for experience. And it was one of the blokes, I think, broke his back. And I got hurled through the perspex in my harness. And, you know, the harness is holding in the seat. The harness was holding me. And I'd got, like, blue braces and a big blue band there. And I'd got a damaged knee. And I remember being offended when I said to my first pilot, who I still see from time to time, he said, "I hope you're not going to report sick, are you?" So I said, "I'm certainly not." I mean, if I'd hobbled, I would have not cried off. But, the fact that 22 gliders were written off, and a Horsa glider cost £6,000, which was the cost of a Spitfire or a Hurricane. So it was a great deal of money wasted. And
so what went wrong? Why did you get the money?
Partly, maybe some of the pilots were not sufficiently experienced. But I think a main thing was, when you take off from one airfield for another one, you've got to adjust your altimeters. If you think of it, aerodromes are at different levels, aren't they? And my chief pilot, I still see him, but don't talk about this, and he's grateful if I never mention it. He hadn't made the adjustment, you see. So when we were coming in, my job was following, holding the identical controls on the right side of it. I just had really, if anything had gone wrong with him, I mean in wartime, if he'd been shot, say, then the drill is you've got somebody following through so that you don't lose a lot of people. And I had to read off from the altimeter as we were descending. And I remember I just got at 200 feet when, bang, we struck. And Netheravon is a bit like a golf course in a way. In other words, it's not perfectly flat. It's these little hillocks up and down, which saved me, really, because when we struck at just about 200 feet, because Bob should have had another 200 feet, but due to his carelessness, he hadn't. And others are doing the thing. Plus, there was another thing, that the wind direction had changed after we'd taken off. And really, we should have used, all of us being instructed, to notice the signals from the ground, not from the briefing, say, an hour and a half beforehand, because on the ground they put sometimes illuminated T's at night, or they'll put a bright smoke flare, and you can see the true direction of the wind then. And of course your job is to land into wind, because it cuts down your ground speed, obviously. And as you're coming in at 80 or 85 miles an hour in a great big thing, it's not a thing to land in the wrong place, is it? But we were getting gliders coming in from the other direction, so that we were closing at 120, 130, and it's lucky that there were no aerial collisions like that. Anyway, they decided, as most of us thought, that the main landings will not be at night, because they're too dodgy. Yeah. I mean, if you make a mistake in powered aircraft, yeah. Open the throttles, go around again, or take another position. But once you're coming down at night in a glider, which is very, very dodgy.
So lessons were learned from that.
Yes, indeed. Yes, yes.
Must have been quite a quiet journey home from that exercise, really, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Somber. Yeah.
Because that must have made you all a bit apprehensive in a way.
Well, I think nobody was nervous about it, but a lot of people were annoyed. And I was grateful, and Bob Boyce was grateful that we got away with it. Mm. But, one fellow didn't, one para. Mm. So
the Arnhem briefings you got, how far ahead of Arnhem did they start, as it were?
Well, we were being briefed almost every two or three days by places in Belgium. But those places that we were briefed, we studied the photographs, looked at the maps, and it was difficult to keep enthusiasm up, really, thinking that'll be overrun and we won't be needed. And some people, including the green people like me, were thinking, hope to goodness, they don't need have us after all. That would be training for nothing. It was like the, tanks, no operation there. So I would have thought it was a fraud, just doing like a permanent student,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
So, yeah. So you got the briefings
about
days, weeks,
three of no, only three or four days on days. That. Yeah.
Had you any idea of what support you were going to have and what, just how many other troops would be involved?
We needn't have. I was going to say, and I think I better say it. We were brighter than average people, and we two operators in self-contained ways, in a way. So obviously, it needs a big drive, a land drive, and we secure the zones ahead. The two American divisions, the 82nd and the 101st, they were going to secure the bridges at Nijmegen was the middle one. I forget the other one, and there was the canal bridge as well. And it was our job to hold the landing zones. Unfortunately, and rather stupidly, 8 miles from Arnhem itself, which was the object, where the main bridge was.
Did you have any contact with the Americans before Arnhem?
Only a little. I played baseball with them once, and I'm no wiser about the game now. And some American bomber planes landed in our place in bad weather. But it was superficial contact.
Did you have any sort of opinion about the quality of their troops and training and so on?
Yes, we'd heard that the tug pilots, they'd released our people and it had lost a lot of lives. We'd heard that in North Africa, in Tunis, that the Americans weren't supposed to be very good. And I admired America, and I like most Americans. My brother was an American for 40 years before he died, and I've been to the States many times, and I like them. But watching the television, I think that they're not terribly good ground troops. You'll get that version from a lot of people as you go around, I think.
So when you went into Arnhem, you weren't thinking, goodness, we've got the Americans in support, that will be all right.
No, because it was the 30, it was 30 called British force that was going to relieve. Actually, the airborne people, the 101st Division, they were very good, by all accounts, at the bridge at Nijmegen. Mm-hmm. In fact, Horrocks, not rest his soul, because I think he put us in the mire there, he makes a point of saying how good the 101st Airborne were. And he doesn't mention the 1st Airborne that had the dirtiest and the most dangerous job. But by implication, if we'd been as good as the 101st, I mean, Arnhem wouldn't be a glorious defeat.
Cyril Williams, end of reel 5. Cyril Williams, reel 6.